Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
I told you about our business review panel. They're here in the shape of Valerie Cox. She's an author and a journalist. And also we're joined by Robert Whelan of Rockwell Finance. Valerie, I was delighted you were coming in to talk newspapers with us this morning, because RTE is on the front pages of many of them, and we know you're an expert on RTE.
Oh,
so, TV license revenue still falling, a new blow to RTE. Can they take any more blows?
Well, I mean, RTE keeps giving, and this is the extraordinary thing. I mean, who would have thought they'd be in the headlines again this week? But the TV license situation is very serious. It's falling. And since 2022, there's actually been a decline in the number of licenses bought by 179,000, which is a huge number.
It's 3.5 million.
It's an awful lot of money.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the chairman of RTE and everything during the week, all they were saying was, we want to get people back into the post offices. We want to get them buying these licenses again. But how are you going to do that if all of these little scandals keep tipping out? I mean, this week now, it was the Mooney payment, Derek Mooney. And the really interesting thing I thought about this in Fiona Sheehan's article was that when we had the Tubridy scandal, he describes that as a public crucifixion. But he says Mooney is being wrapped in cotton wool. And this is absolutely true, because if you look at the report or the statement of June 23, Tubridy was named and shamed 18 times. And the corresponding statement regarding Mooney mentions him just twice.
So why is that?
I have no idea. I mean, I think really they've gone to great lengths to protect him. But there's another very interesting piece here by Keith Kelly, where he goes to the 10 revelations to Rock RTE since the Tubridy revelations. And I mean, the things like Lottie Ryan plugging a car on Canvas, Dieran Garrahy recording a sneaky porridge ad in the studio.
Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing.
No, we shouldn't be laughing. I mean, this is all very serious. Then we had Toy Show the Musical, where they commissioned a musical based on the Late Late Toy Show, and it only sold 11,000 tickets when they spent €500,000 on it, and 400,000 on rehearsals, which is where, you know, you have all the kids coming from all over the country, all the little would-be Bugsy Malones eating burgers and chips.
Like, all these, you know, revelations keep coming back. Every time there's a new revelation, we're all talking about the flip-flops and all the other stuff again.
Of course.
So if you keep drip-feeding these things, the old stuff never really goes away.
No, it doesn't.
In terms of the public debate.
No, it brings it all up again. And of course, this week also, we had the revelations about Sean Rocks.
And his family, and it seems to be appalling.
It's absolutely tragic, yeah. Bobby, it really is. And, you know, it highlights the fact that over so long in RTE, we've had all of this misclassification, multi-classification,
yeah.
And people really don't know where they stand. But I really do hope that they're going to be able to sort out Sean Rock's situation, because apparently his partner has been telling them about this since he died so tragically,
yeah.
That, you know, his pension is totally inadequate, she says, based on the work that he did for RTE. And that, you know, that needs to be looked at very closely. There's also this bogus self-employment probe, and that's going on at the moment. Now, apparently there've been a lot of settlements already in that, totaling about 5 million. And this is where people were wrongly classified as self-employed, when really they were performing the function of being a staff member.
Robert, briefly, your thoughts on this before we move to the ICS story.
I think so. If you look at the economics of it, the challenge is like, you've seen a 20% drop in the number of people who paid a license fee 3 years ago to today. That trend is now, you'll find it very hard to get them back into the net.
Yeah.
And if you look at the first time buyer who's just bought a new house, we're going to just come on to mortgage rates, etc. They aren't even using the TV. So the notion of paying a license, I just think that the trend there, I would be worried as a permanent trend. I'd be worried as a taxpayer, because I think you're looking at
the taxpayer picks up the
correct
shortfall.
This is the point. And I think the burden on the taxpayer is only going to increase, I believe.
Okay. Now, let's talk about ICS. They're also known as DILISC, as I understand it, increasing its mortgage rates for the third time in 2026 as an ECB hike is expected.
Yeah.
So give us your thoughts around this. As I understand it, they're a non-bank lender. So they don't get the same, European interest rates, and they can't use mortgage. Or they can't use deposits.
Yes.
Like banks can.
Absolutely. So your pillar banks in Ireland are sitting on famously about 170 billion in deposits. So they're able to leverage those deposits.
Yeah.
And then go to the market and borrow money from the market and then offer mortgage rates based on that. Non-bank lenders such as ICS, Dillisk is the parent, and Nua Money, who are also quoted in this piece by Charlie Weston in the Indo, have to go to the private markets and have to source the money. So they are subject to more variables than, say, the pillar banks would be. And so what
does that de facto mean? That they're going to be more expensive to the consumer?
Yes, and right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And with that, so what you'll find is with them, though, they understand that. So what they'll try and take is, let's just say, quote unquote, a more pragmatic view. So, for instance, people who may be finding it difficult to get approval with a pillar bank may have be more successful with some of the non-bank lenders.
But they're going to pay more.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then what about this ECB rate hike now likely in June? Inflation had climbed to 3%. That's the bad news.
Yeah.
Energy prices might stay high for longer is now a certainty. So, 1 and 1 equals 2 equals interest hike rate.
Yeah, absolutely. And Christine Lagarde was kind of just saying it's almost a certainty now. And it's all a reaction to obviously what's going on globally, but primarily around the Middle East and the increase in energy costs.
Valerie, talking about the increase in energy costs, Irish wholesale fuel prices surged by almost 33%. Yes. In April due to the Iran crisis, and this could be the tip of the iceberg.
It could be. I mean, this is obviously the early ripple effects from the closure of the Straits of Hormuz. But, you know, the entire energy shock coming from the US-Israeli attacks on Iran, I mean, this is what's causing the fuel prices to absolutely balloon. In April, we had the wholesale rates going up to 32.6%. Which is absolutely enormous, you know. And, you know, part of the problem really here is that people are trying to shore up future problems rather than even looking at what's happened already. Now, I mean, the fuel prices is one thing, and we've all seen that absolutely everywhere. And, you know, it's caused an awful lot of consternation. People are in trouble with these fuel prices. And that's something, you know, when we read the headlines, we read the percentages, we don't often think about the individuals who are trying to heat their homes or whatever. And maybe this promised heat wave is going to ease that. But it's also spilling over now into fertilizer prices.
Which is obviously related to farming.
Yeah. But what I don't get is, of all the 27 member states, we are second on the list for the highest increase. Only Romania is higher than us. Now, that is a ridiculous situation. 7.3 percentage points above the EU average. That's where we are at the moment. Now, this obviously came from the EU Commission on Tuesday. They announced a new fertilizer action plan. Now, I don't see that it looks very different to what we've already been doing. They're talking about stockpiling fertilizers supplies.
It seems odd as well, does it not, that prices actually fell in Bulgaria, Croatia and Lithuania.
Yeah, it's very
odd.
What's
that about?
Very odd. And also what they want to do is boost European production of fertilizer. I mean, this is mostly nitrogen. Why couldn't we have been doing this already? Are we not doing it already? I mean, I was quite amazed to hear our fertilizer was coming from so far away, from countries that don't even have a decent bit of soil in them, you know?
Yeah. Robert, Sinead O'Sullivan, she was on with us here a few weeks ago, and we were really impressed with her view of life and economics and politics and loads of things. But she's a really interesting piece today, and she's talking about strategic ambiguity served Ireland well until it didn't. It's a piece that's well worth a read.
It's absolutely. I came across her in The Currency a few years ago. And found her really profound, and obviously she's writing in today's times. She's really starting to shake the establishment, to be fair to her, and I love the way she thinks. And if you think about it, all she's really doing is coming at it with a pragmatic view. The tone of this piece is, and I'll quote, If everybody is getting more, nobody is losing. Ambiguity in this sense is the way in which Ireland was able to postpone having to prioritise. So what she's trying to say is that when you're always, if you're not forced to prioritise, you're not forced to make decisions, you end up always taking the middle ground, which means nothing gets done. And what she's really leaning into is the potential rise of extremes in politics when people are getting so sick and tired of the middle doing nothing, they will go to one side or the other. And she's pointing towards the rise of Farage in the UK versus middle of the road Starmer. She's talking about how Trump was able to completely demolish Kamala Harris. And she even talked about and I love the fact that she said in Ireland, the entire proposition of the official opposition is that we're not Fine Gael and we're not Fianna Fáil.
Yeah.
And she's entirely.
And our problem is that we've got a budget surplus with all this money that we're spending badly. It is a good piece, no?
No, it's an excellent piece, actually. And there was a line here I liked. When the economy is growing, you do not actually have to choose between housing and immigration. And if everyone's getting more, nobody's losing. Ambiguity in this sense is the way in which Ireland was able to postpone having to prioritise, which is another way of saying that Ireland was able to postpone having a strategy at all.
And she also says that the US and China are no longer friends.
Yeah.
And Ireland will be forced sooner or later to choose between them. So, 100%. Yeah, the middle ground is a dangerous space, is the summary here.
Yeah, and we've been very good at occupying it, but I think she's saying our reckoning is coming.
Yeah. Bobby Healy from Mana, a bit of a blow to him. He is certainly out there on the frontier of doing new things, but Mana actually refused permission in Fine Gael. Not sure the consumer is liking what he's doing.
No. He's had awful trouble with Fine Gael County Council. There's been various findings. He was refused planning permission for a hub in Castleknock and he was forced to dismantle it. And that was the second one he had to dismantle. There was another structure in Clonsilla because he was refused retention on that. Now, this is a huge setback for him because he's, piloting this drone delivery service and he's actually working in Cork at the moment trying to get it up and running. And local residents there are complaining about noise, pollution and lack of privacy. In the Dublin situation, they also found, apart from being contrary to proper planning, that it was prejudicial to public health, the drone delivery. And I was kind of wondering, was that noise pollution or was it because he was delivering all this fast food, fatty food, chips into your garden, all that kind of thing? That could be prejudicial to your health as well. But there's a lot of supporters of these delivery firms. Some people believe you don't need any planning permission, but obviously Fine Gael believes differently. The Cork situation is that the County Council, City Council, have given Mana 1 month to respond to a warning letter regarding this new delivery hub he has at Marina Market on Central Park Road. So it's interesting. I think he's got the weight of public opinion behind him. People like drone deliveries. And apart from food deliveries at all, there's all sorts of...
I'm not sure about
ways.
That, Valerie. No? I'm not sure people do. I think this is... It kind of goes against the grain because I'd like to see him succeed.
Yeah.
This is frontier stuff. He's doing new things.
Yes.
He's an innovator. He's a brilliant...
He's a brilliant
tech guy.
Yeah.
But, first mover sometimes, Robert.
I think so.
Can be a lonely place.
It absolutely can. And he's taken in, just last week, I saw on his feed that he was out in California with ARC, which would be an enormous venture capital firm, and he's taken in money. But I know people who live very close to the flight path of that particular site in Coolmine. And a client of mine and his daughter is 22. And he said regularly the drone will fly at a level that can see into her bedroom. And they have to get over the privacy piece.
Yeah.
That is a big challenge, is privacy. And I think what I see is an enormous benefit for medicine, people living in rural Ireland who can't get to the local pharmacy. I think drone delivery is amazing. But possibly for takeaway coffee, I think we just need to take a route. Because I think it'd be incredibly powerful technology.
Yeah. I think the jury's still out, but let's see.
Yeah.
AI, Valerie, is it just an excuse for billionaires firing people?
Now, this is a great article by Adrian Weckler. And he's asking the questions, which, you know, you don't see asked too much. He says, are big tech companies lying to us when they say AI is the reason they're sacking people? And he gives lots of examples here of various firms where they're calling it AI washing at the moment now, because they're blaming AI for cutting back these jobs. And of course, we've seen the latest one now with Meta, where, you know, they have 1,800 people working in Dublin. They're going to cut 350 jobs in Ireland. But he says, Block, that was formerly Twitter founder, Jack Dorsey, said his company's job cuts were because AI fundamentally changes what it means to build and run a company. Now, Adrian says six of the large high-tech employers with bases in Ireland have cumulatively announced or indicated over 1,000 job cuts this year, and around half of them have signalled that AI is the cause. Now, he asks, if AI isn't the real culprit, what is it? And he says it's important not to ignore other factors. I mean, we had hiring trends, which huge hiring going on during COVID, all of that.
Meta almost doubled their headcount.
That's right. Yes. And there was inevitably going to be a bit of a cutback on that when it got back to a more normal situation. But then he says, could it be cost cutting? You know, the tech giants, Amazon, Meta, Google, Oracle and others say that they plan to spend around $1 trillion on AI investments this year. Now, that means building data centres and chips and things as well. Yet some of those firing their workers are rolling in money like never before. And he said also the market, it loves to hear them say things that they can fire engineers, HR staff, marketers, middle managers and replace them all with AI tools.
And we have to remember there's a people behind every one of those jobs.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. It's right. Like some of it's a brilliant piece by Adrian Weckler, and he gets to it. Actually, he quotes Reid Hoffman, who founded LinkedIn, who effectively just called it as it was. It's just the usual overhired, and all this is a, and what they're doing is effectively using AI to come to get over the fact that they overhired during COVID. And but some of the numbers here are eye-watering. Like Meta's profits in Q1 were $26.8 billion.
Yeah.
So they're on target to do profit of over $100 billion. Profit at $100 billion. Yeah. So, and look, I looked at globally, their headcount last year was costing $27 billion. So a 10% global cut saves them, you know, $2.7, $3 billion. They're forecast to spend $135 billion on AI, Meta alone. That's just Meta.
Yeah.
So they're saying it's so we can invest in AI, but in reality.
Now, Valerie, I know you're into sustainability. And I want to ask you about Vinted. Are you a customer of Vinted? Because it's delivering a huge boost to Unpost.
It is actually. It's quite extraordinary. I mean, the rise of Vinted in this country. Actually, where I live, there's a small shop, small local shop, and they are one of the places where you can collect your parcels and bring your parcels. And there's regularly, every time you go into it now, there's like three or four people handing over parcels. It's caught the imagination of the Irish people and, you know, and people all over Europe. But I think it's a great idea.
Because everybody wins.
Everybody wins. And it's so easy to operate. Yeah. And they've even brought in a system now where you walk into your post office, you hand your parcel, you show your phone, and the delivery label is actually printed in the post office from your phone. Now, I think the shops get about, I'm not sure about the deal with Unpost, but the shops get about 40 cent a parcel for taking it in. And, you know, it's getting rid of all these old clothes, not throwing them out, giving them a new life. And it's not just clothes, it's household items as well. Now, what I really learned from this article, though, is Anna McHugh of Unpost, because apparently she is one of his greatest proponents and she's really busy there selling her clothes, her household items, buying stuff as well.
She and just quietly promoting the post office.
Just quietly.
But I mean, she's, I would love to have this woman come to my house and declutter it and sell everything on Vinted. I mean, it would be absolutely wonderful, but it's really caught on here, and it's boosting the footfall into the post offices. That's the important thing here.
Which is great to see.
Absolutely, yeah.
Robert, I don't know if you bought this calendar in Rome, but there's an Italian model behind Rome's hot priest calendar. And he's saying it's all a joke, but apparently there are priests as part of this good-looking priest's calendar. Tell us more.
Well, there's you've just revealed your birthday present I bought for you, Bobby. So we've got a scandal in the Vatican where sexy calendars of gorgeous priests, of which it's been claimed now a third aren't actually priests at all, and a quarter aren't Italian, are being sold for €8 in the Vatican. And the whole idea behind it is that it's a scandal because people think they're hot priests, but they're not. And I think it just goes to show you that there's been a revival of the Catholic Church, you see, particularly in America. And it's all around, they're saying that the young people are attracted to the sexiness and the razzmatazz of how the Catholic Church presents itself. So it leads into that.
What's your take on this hot priest scandal, Valerie?
Well, it is a bit of a scandal because they're not all priests. Some of them are, though. A few of them have actually agreed to pose. And one of the guys said, it is, he's pretending to be a priest, but he said, managing to be sexy in a priest's collar is no small feat. But I think that we should also mention the fact that this does not have the approval of the Catholic Church. So I'm waiting for the sexy nuns calendar.
On that note, priestly note, we'll leave it. Big thanks to my guests, Valerie Cox and Robert Whelan. Enjoy the sunshine at the weekend, folks. And thanks for coming into us this morning.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.